This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hey everybody, it is Aaron Norris. We are back with more on accessory dwelling units, and today we've got John Aronson of Backyard Homes, actually several companies. He's a licensed general contractor, a manufactured home contractor, a licensed real estate broker, and manufactured home dealer. I think that makes you a quadruple threat. He's been my go-to for the last several years about accessory dwelling units. We met because of an introduction by Linska out at SDCIA. And we've just had a great time getting to know each other, and I get to nerd out with legislation, anything around accessory dwelling units for the last year. And his whole family is actually involved in the business. His son and daughter run the main operations for On the Level General Contractors, and his wife operates MH Processing LLC, and she's a great resource for lending around the manufactured space. I always bug her around questions around ADU. So anyway, John, welcome to the show. Glad to have you back.
Thanks. Thank you for having me back.
Well, we have so much to talk about today. I am so excited, and we have a little bit of time, so I'm going to take our time because what I'm learning is that accessory dwelling units are still not on people's radar, even though we've been talking about it for a year. They don't get it, and it's not all their fault. I got to speak in Long Beach last week at NARPM, so the National Association of Residential Property Managers. And the vast majority of the property managers in the audience had no idea that this had come up. And this has been part of state law since 2017. So in your experience, what are you sensing out in there? Is it just the lack of marketing? Is it just people don't know? Like, how do they not know?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I can tell you there's been a chronology here. I remember in 2017, when the first laws first hit the street, 1069 and AB 22, I think it was 2299 and another assembly bill, kind of all came out at one time. I was invited down to SDCIA. At that time, I wasn't a member, but I soon thereafter joined, and I was invited to speak a little bit about ADUs. And the first thing I asked was, raise your hand if you've ever heard of an ADU. And almost nobody raised their hand. And then I said, raise your hand if you've ever heard of an ADU. I think maybe one or two people out of 200 or 300 raised their hand. That was in 2017. Mm-hmm. In 2018, I was in front of a group. Can't remember exactly where it was, but it was a pretty large crowd. I asked the same question, and about half the people raised their hand. So a year later, maybe 50% of the audience, this is an audience that was tuned in to ADUs. It wasn't just a random audience. This was an audience that was there to gather information about an ADU. So that kind of taught me another lesson. And then this year, just a month or so ago, I was asked to deliver a presentation to a large group of folks at San Diego City College. There's probably 300 or 400 people there. And I said, well, I'm going to change this question around from the way I usually pose it. Raise your hand if you never heard of an ADU. And not one person raised their hand.
Okay.
So
the word is getting out.
The word is getting out. And I think slowly but surely, if people are becoming more savvy to it. The only problem we're running into, and this is where it gets frustrating, especially for guys like me who are responsible for building these things. The laws are changing, and the ordinances in the respective jurisdictions statewide are changing about as often as you and I change the sheets on our bed. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. The minute you think you get your arms around the whole concept and get a grasp on it, and all of a sudden a whole new entourage of changes are coming into play. And that's kind of what's going on with this last entourage of new laws.
Yeah, October saw, I think it was four, we'll go over them in the show, four accessory dwelling unit bills, and one that caught me off guard passed in August, and I don't know how. It got through, and I think it's going to cause a lot of problems. We'll talk about that as well. But this conversation started back in, just we'll back up real quick, just in case you're new to ADUs. Accessory dwelling unit, you've seen them. They've existed all along. Granny flats, casitas, mother-in-law suites, backyard homes, converted garages. These are the little units inside existing square footage, detached properties. It stands for anything that's sort of an accessory unit to where you can live, sleep, eat. They need to sort of be complete. And this started in September of 2016 when three separate bills were signed by the governor into law to address housing shortage. Depending on who you talk to, we're anywhere from 1.5 to 3 million short in housing in the state of California. And what's so brilliant about the conversation right now is it just lands at such a unique time. Prices are hot in California. It meets a lot of economic goals for the state. It creates jobs. ADUs are environmentally friendly because they leverage existing infrastructure, so it helps with the urban sprawl. We've got the social issues that it addresses, everything from homelessness, from seniors trying to downsize into smaller units. And I think my favorite is that I love talking about NIMBYs, the not in my backyarders, and the builders call them bananas, the build absolutely nothing anywhere near anythingers. The state effectively, the state has just said enough, because even though we live in a very liberal state, what was happening is that when ADUs made its way down to the local level, city council members are not so politically driven. It's not Democrat versus Republican. You represent your constituents. So when development comes their way and you get the squeaky wheels who don't want it, especially when it comes to affordable housing, it just gets shut down. So the state in this latest round of laws, they've tried. And there was a lot of games that's been played the last couple of years, but everything from we're going to charge you $50,000 from building that 600 square feet to limiting the minimum and maximum size you can build where effectively you just couldn't build at all. A lot of games being played by the cities trying to stop this going to effect. So I'm thrilled to share some of the updates, and I've got some questions. And to be fair to John, he doesn't necessarily know some of these questions are coming. Where he and I are not CPAs or an attorney. So we're just going to discuss some of this out loud to try to find some of the ramifications. But I came up with a simple code for investors to sort of process some of this through, because I think there are some narrow exemptions of where ADUs can't be built. And this is sort of where I landed, John. I call it the HUH method, like HUH. And it stands for, the first H stands for health and safety, U stands for utilities, and the final H stands for historic and environmental areas. So health and safety, I basically think that the way that I'm reading the code as it's updated now is that there are going to be some exemptions if health and safety are a concern. Are you reading it the same way?
Yep.
Okay. Utilities, you're just not going to get out of some utility issues. So you and huh, it's like, you know, if you're on a septic system and you think you're going to triplex size a lot, that's going to require a lot of extra infrastructure. Or you might be at a utility just say, hey, we don't have enough water. We don't have power, enough power. I don't know. Utilities, lines overhead. I know this was an issue with Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. The utility is owned by the ratepayers. And if you looked ahead and saw a line, the city wasn't necessarily going to let you build an ADU, because if there were a fire because of a down line, who gets sued? Effectively, the taxpayer. So you've still got a few issues there, and it might be a safety issue in the utility department. And finally, historic and environmental areas, coastal commissions, downtown areas that are already very dense and there's no parking where they can sort of point to health and safety. I still think that that might be an issue. So what I'm trying to cover is investors going into buying something, assuming that they're going to be able to build, and they get stuck. I want them to do a lot of research before they buy. So am I missing anything, John? Are those sort of the categories that you see as well?
Oh, no, you're not missing the thing. In fact, just to augment a tad on, you made reference to the utility issue, and we're working on a project right now where, and the septic issues can make or break a deal.
Okay.
I've seen them kill a lot of deals for a number of reasons, but I had an interesting thing crop up the other day. The property was on a septic system, However, it was a large parcel. It was over an acre. And subsequently, the people had owned the home for 20-some years. And subsequently, they had had the opportunity to have a sewer line brought up not far from their home to accommodate a new development that was being proposed. And they are right now in the process of being able, we'll know next week, or hopefully next week, that whether or not they'll be able to actually tap into that sewer line and pay that extra meter fee, which they're more than willing to do. Because if they can't do that, then they can't have an ADU.
Yep. Okay.
So that was kind of an interesting scenario.
Well, I know in Florida where we're building, I've been exposed a lot more to septic. I think in California in general, I guess it depends on where you live. Just living in Southern California, you say septic and people sort of look at you with the ew face, like, what are you talking about? Gross. But where it definitely has a brand here in California, it seems like. In Florida, in the areas that we're building, it's very different. But I know for a fact that when you go from like a 3-bedroom, 2-bath to a 4-bedroom, it expands the requirements for your septic system. And then the health department can get involved. It can really blow up the cost of a project, especially if it's an existing house. You know, it's something that you better know going in. And I've seen investors.
All about the bedroom.
Yep. And you don't want to cheat. You don't want to say, oh no, it's a 3-bedroom with a den. And then you're putting bunk beds in all the rooms. Like there's a max, you're going to max out the system and you might think you're being cute and saving money, but it's got to be functional and that can cause a lot of other problems. So you need to do it right. There's a reason why we have the health department. Don't do that. Let's dig into some of the things that passed. So AB 670 was approved by the governor back in August of 30, and it had to do with HOAs basically making CC&Rs illegal that didn't allow you to build an ADU. So specifically it says, it is the intent of the legislature in enacting this act to encourage the construction of affordable accessory dwelling units and junior accessory dwelling units that are owner-occupied and that are used for rentals of terms longer than 30 days. So there's a few juicy things there. The affordable word comes up. Junior accessory dwelling units, because I own condos, rentals in California. And just for fun, I showed up at one of the HOA meetings a couple weeks ago. And I said, I'm not going to do this. I just want to bring it to your attention. Technically, I can convert my garage to an accessory dwelling unit, and there's very little that you guys are going to be able to do now. And the look on their face was pretty priceless. But in essence, the bill makes void and unenforceable any CC&Rs that prevent me being able to build a reasonably built. So I'm trying to think of this from the perspective of an HOA. How could I stop this? And the only place that I've landed is that if the HOA has a limit of how many rentals can exist inside an HOA for reasons of lending, unwarrantable condos are always an issue. If you've got one investor builder who owns too many units, or there are too many non-owner occupieds within an HOA, it can cause issues with lending. And I see that as reasonable. Do I see very many HOAs, condos being able to convert garages? I don't know. But has this come to your attention at all, or has anybody asked you about it yet?
Yeah, I mean, it's all over the place, Aaron. It's all these new laws are very confusing to most people, and there's a lot of what if. I mean, the main, verbiage is what if this happens? What if that happens? What are they going to do here? What are they going to do there? I mean, a lot of these things are overtly superseding or overriding the California Constitution by way of congressional vote. And people are just kind of at a loss. They're going like, well, okay, so what's next? Everything's changing. All the rules and regs are changing. So they're waiting for the next shoe to drop. And they are in a huge quandary right now.
Yeah, it's interesting that the state really smacked. I mean, the biggest loser of the 18 real estate bills that passed in October is definitely municipalities. They've lost all control. I just don't know how this snuck through. I can't believe I didn't see it, but to read it and go, oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Well, I just heard yesterday on another webinar that 40% of California residents, which I thought was unbelievable, but 40% of California residents are impacted by some type of an HOA or CC&R.
Oh, I had no idea it was that much. Okay.
Which is huge. So that what that says is it's opening up the opportunity to add an ADU to your property to millions of people that were otherwise kind of locked out.
Well, and so a junior accessory dwelling unit, it can be a converted garage, because in an HOA, like the condos that I own, I don't own the land. And so it's not like I can't like bump out my square footage and add square footage, but I certainly can reconfigure some of the internal square footage and then leverage the garage to make this happen. And at least two of my HOAs, parking is not an issue. So I could definitely do this. And to find out that the HOA couldn't stop me is crazy town, because some of these HOAs are a real pain. I'm ready to sell all my condos because HOAs I hate.
Well, we were looking for condos just a couple of weeks ago. And I'll tell you, the HOAs that are the big impasse. I mean, and what I really have no use for are these HOAs that they're organizations. They're actually businesses. They're like property management companies. They manage maybe 10 or 12 or 20 associations. So they're not really HOAs looking out for the interests of the people that live in the particular development. They're just big businesses. They're just big property management companies.
Absolutely.
And I'm thinking, I can't even believe this. I don't want to touch. That's like having a landlord.
Well, nobody. I don't like being a private letter ruling by the IRS or a case study. So I see a lot of problems with. This is good in theory. It just makes me nervous, because if I decided to try to go down that route and then the HOA tries to sue me to stop me, I don't know what that looks like, because the law is very clear on the municipality side. Like, now we'll go into it in a second. One of the things that changes that a city has 60 days to process a permit for an existing property adding an ADU. It's different if it's a new construction and you're adding an ADU as part of the project, but they have 60 days to approve it. If they don't, it's considered approved. HOAs, that's not really clear on the process of getting approval at all. So I don't know if I would still have to go to my board and present the plans, attach this bill and say, sorry about it, you're going to go have to approve it at this board meeting or by the next board meeting. If not, I'm just going to proceed. I mean, oh man. Definitely off the Christmas card list. I don't know, as a property owner of condos, how I feel about people converting. If it starts, I don't like when it messes with the pricing for the product. So we just have to be careful. This is good in theory, but I don't know how I feel about this just yet.
Well, it is providing housing, but at what cost?
Correct.
And I feel bad for the folks that don't have, you know, the opportunity to own a home or even live in a place. I mean, that's a whole other story in and of itself, but it, like you say, it does come with a price, and the jury's still out. I mean, what scares me to death, and I know I'm kind of veering away from topic here a little bit, but what I'm seeing now is that a single family residence under all these new laws can now go from being a single family residence to a triplex,
yep,
if you will.
I found, you know, the state of California actually links to a site, I forget the name of it, but it actively promotes triplexizing a single family residence. So adding a JDU and an accessory dwelling unit in the back. I'm like, oh no, here we go. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all over the place. And you know, that what I'm seeing every day, I get questions from individuals that I'm trying to do business with. I'm trying to help design and build ADUs for, and I can't give them honest answers all the time, because I don't really know them, because things are changing so quickly. And I know it's incumbent upon me to know these ordinances in the jurisdictions that I'm working in, but they're changing so fast. And I'm not an attorney, and I don't walk around with an earplug in my ear listening to everything that's coming up on every point. It's impossible.
Well, and this is a really good point to stop and just say, you know, the stuff that we're talking about today specifically is state rules. When it trickles down to the local ordinance, it's setting the base. It's giving permission. Each different city is going to approach us in a very different fashion. I know, for instance, the city of Riverside, if you're a nonprofit, is currently going to allow tiny homes, which technically falls under the Department of Motor Vehicle rules. It has nothing to do with Title 24, 25. It's personal property. It's not real estate. So it doesn't even include a reassessment of the property, which is exciting. Cities like San Jose going all in. And then you've got other cities that are just making it so onerous and doing everything in their power to make it not possible. So you really do have to dig down deep, and you can't make assumptions. You have to call. Before I spoke in Long Beach, I called the planning department in Long Beach just to, I had heard rumors that they were a little bit difficult to work with, and I called, and they didn't seem very happy. And they're like, yeah, we haven't looked at the new rules. These rules don't go into effect until January of 2020. And I've already been warned, if you start early and you contact the planning department now and you start in the process, it doesn't mean that you're going to get grandfathered into some of the goodies we're going to talk about today. So just know that up front. It is difficult to follow. You do have to get very local, and you need to make sure that the rules are going to apply to when you decide to start your project. So, all right. AB 68, it's an update for land use for accessory dwelling units, and you might be able to speak to this. Some cities are really fooling around with the square footage, saying, oh, it had to be so big or so small. Effectively, in both the square footage of the lot as well as what was being built, effectively making it impossible to build an ADU. So they really set some standards of minimum and max. Did you deal with that in the San Diego market? Some cities sort of making it more difficult just by codifying that square footage was going to be an issue.
Oh, sure. I mean, that's the card they play anytime they can, you know, but now under these new laws, they're going into effect first of the year. They're not going to be able to get away with that. So, again, though, are they really embracing these laws, or are they going to take it to the wall? I mean, I've heard some of these jurisdictions are being outright stubborn about it, and they're kind of almost bucking the system and saying, okay, sue me.
Yeah, no, I've already heard that. That one city says, we're not going to comply. We plan on suing the state. So,
yeah, there you go.
Well, when
I've heard talk about class action lawsuits from, you know, multiple jurisdictions kind of coming together and going against the state on a lot of this stuff.
Wait, yeah.
So I think the jury's still out.
And if you're in the middle of building one of these and you get caught up in that, that's not fun. So
no,
I always recommend that investors right now, before January of 2020, you better call and know the stance on accessory dwelling units now, because one of the things that we're going to talk about, well, we can just bring it up now. It was actually in a few of the bills that passed, as there's a moratorium on cities not allowing for non-owner occupied properties to build ADUs. They didn't. So, for example, currently Moreno Valley and Riverside, if I called them and tried to get a permit for an ADU for one of my rentals, they wouldn't even talk to me. If I don't live on the property, absolutely not. Where the city of Corona, they're like, yeah, no problem. So I want to know that now, because as an investor, if I'm going to spend $100,000 to $150,000 on an accessory dwelling unit, and I don't know if they're going to be friendly to me in 5 years after the moratorium ends, I think that's just a mistake. You better know what's coming, especially if it goes poorly.
Can you explain to me what exactly that means? I mean, okay, so let's say 2025 comes and goes, and the law is basically repealed. What does that mean? I mean, does that mean that all of a sudden you as an investor are out of luck, or you've got to take up occupancy there, or you got to, what does that exactly mean?
I always look a little bit too far in the future probably, but what they could do is something like Anaheim did for vacation rentals. They basically said, enough, you have till 2021, and I think there was an extension, but you've got 2021 to either convert the rental away from Airbnb and converting it back to a long-term rental, or you need to sell. Those were your two choices. So in 5 years after the non-owner occupied moratorium ends at the state level, the state could decide to renew it. Hey, we're still shortage on housing at the state level. We're going to reinforce it. That's a possibility. Or if it goes back down to the municipality and they say, you know what, this has gone great. We're fine leaving the moratorium in place. It doesn't have to be owner occupied. But if you get a city that says, you know what, nope, this has gone horribly. The density is a problem. We don't like the traffic. We're going to go ahead and require you to convert it back to the primary and the ADU being one tenant, or you need to sell. That doesn't have to be bad if we're in an up market. However, what if we're in a recession and we still don't have enough comps for ADUs and you are forced to sell or rent into a market that's soft? That's what makes me nervous. And I don't like the thought of spending $150,000. At least if I go into a city like Corona right now that's already ADU friendly, I feel like that's a manageable risk. Whereas if I'm talking to a city like Moreno Valley and Riverside who is not pro ADU as of now, it just, I at least want to understand that risk going in. And it doesn't mean that I can't get vocal and involved and petition and provide lots of good case studies to your local politicians. You just have to know the risk and know how to play the game.
Anyway. You know, that's a good point. I got to tell you, just to gear off just a skosh here, I was at a city hall meeting the other night, a week ago at the city of Oceanside, and they are just now rolling out with their ordinance and their whole plan. And you know, we happen to own some VRBO properties in the city of Oceanside. And so I asked the question. I said, okay, I'm an ADU developer and builder, but I'm also a VRBO investor and owner. And I said, if I decide I want to put an ADU on my property that's already deemed a short-term rental, what happens? Because what they were saying is that you can't short-term rental ADUs. So it's kind of almost a dichotomy there. I go, okay, so I'm going to put this extra property or this extra structure on my property to get extra, generate extra VRBO revenue. And they're saying, oh, no, you're not. I go, well, what happens? Well, if you do that, not only does that ADU you put on the property become long-term rental, you've just converted or lost your right to continue short-term renting your primary structure.
Yikes.
I know.
Wow. Well, you know what's interesting about that, though? A lot of the bills are going to get rid of the ability to do the ordinances locally. They're upset. And unfortunately, it's going to bring a lot of attention to short-term rentals because a lot of people want to do this. But the over 30 days, a lot of the code from what I'm seeing is going to say less than 30 days. So it doesn't mean that you can't do furnished vacation rentals for over 30 days. It might be more difficult to rent, but I think it's still a possibility. You just have to play a different game.
Well, no, and from that standpoint, you're right. I mean, as long as you're meeting the 30-day requirement. But my point was like the weekender or the short-term or the one-week guy, you know, that would all be waived or that would all be revoked.
Huh. My mind is working on different ways to get around that, but I probably shouldn't say it on the radio.
please enlighten me.
I just don't know how they're honestly going to track all this stuff either. Again, I don't want to be the case study and, you know, doing it wrong because that's a big deal and that's a lot of money. If you screw that up, yeah, never mind. We won't talk about that. So,
all right,
back to AB 68. It further clarified the requirement to replace parking when parking is demolished because you're building a junior accessory dwelling unit is out the door. So if you convert the garage to a JADU, they're not requiring you to replace the parking. Now, this is my biggest concern with this is I still think there's going to be local ordinances that will squash this only because when you're driving around in like West Hollywood, as an example, when I lived in LA, there is no parking. It's terrible to the point where I think it does become a safety issue because it's just too much. There's nowhere to put all those people. And I know the play is that they're trying to get it to where people aren't using cars, but sorry, California Mass Transit is not there yet. So I would just be careful with that. That's a red flag for me. There's setback requirement from 5 is now at 4 feet. And I think this really had to do with converting you know, the tool shed that was in the backyard that wasn't up to code. I think this was their way of trying to help a little bit. I mean, in your experience, is 1 foot a big deal on the setbacks?
No, not really.
Okay. I was wondering about that. This is interesting, and I wanted to ask you about this. This particular bill clarifies an expansion out 150 square feet from an existing structure still counts as being substantially within an existing structure. So I can bump out the garage 150 square feet, and it's still going to count as a junior accessory dwelling unit. And I was curious to know, does that impact like fees paid, or why would that matter?
Say that again now. Are you talking about a detached garage or an attached garage?
It says that if I bump out a garage, let's say unattached, I bump it out 150 square feet. For the sake of the code, it still counts as being substantially within the existing structure. So is there benefit to being a JADU to building an ADU? I don't know.
I'm not connecting all the dots on that one, Aaron.
Okay,
sorry.
Good. I'm glad I'm not the only one. It just, for some reason, it clarifies that, and I'm not exactly sure why. So I'll have to do some more research. The city must allow for a minimum of an 800-square-foot accessory dwelling unit. More flexible on ADUs, permissible on single-family and multifamily lots. And this was mind-blowing to me, and I don't know if this landed on your radar. It requires a local agency to allow approval of at least one accessory dwelling unit, and up to 25% of the existing units in a multifamily building can be expanded. So if I own a 10-unit apartment building, this code basically gives permission to the city to allow me as a property owner to subdivide internal square footage and expand the number of units by 25%. That's cool.
No, I just heard yesterday there's this lady, I don't know where she's located, but just on a webinar I was on, 200 apartments, and she has parking for all of them. She is going to be able to convert 50 of those, and what she's going to do is she's going to eliminate 50. No, this is not within the apartment. These are ADUs on the property. She's going to take away 50 of the 200 parking spaces and build ADUs. Now, I'd love to know who that lady is, because I'd love to sell her the manufactured components that we have.
Wow.
That would be an ideal application for that. I have a feeling it's somewhere up north, because that's where the webinar originated from. But, I mean, if that's the case, I mean, that's going to change the dynamic drastically on apartment buildings.
Well, yes, I totally agree. And I really want to talk about this for a second, because I think there's some huge opportunities for some funding buckets in several different categories that people might not know about. Check with your utility. See if there are rebates for things like appliances that are energy efficient, air conditioning. You might be surprised, especially in the commercial space, like in LA, for an example, they have a retrofitting fund for older buildings that need to be retrofitted for earthquakes. There's some money. The utility has some money on everything from appliances to insulation. Really bad news came out for the LA controller came out last month complaining out of the $1.2 billion that they raised with their affordable housing fund that the city is in control of. They have nothing to show for it in almost 3 years, and what looks like it's going to come out is costing them $530,000 per unit. So I would not be surprised if they don't start converting that into more creativity and funding projects like this concept of splitting up units. So, man, the one extra layer I want to add to this is that opportunity zones. It doesn't make a ton of sense right now to buy commercial in California because prices have really gone up. But if you know you can go into these units and split them up, invest your money, this might be a really interesting play in the opportunity zone space. So just throwing it out there, I think there's some cool opportunities there. It doesn't mean that the city is going to allow it. It might take you going to city council saying, hey, you really need to look at this. And if you're serious about affordable housing, the thing that this specific bill also addresses, that the Housing and Community Development Department at the state has the ability to review the ordinances and send it to the Attorney General if they're not in compliance. It basically has teeth now. Before, it was just sort of like, yeah, the state's cute. Now, if it goes to the Attorney General, they can start making it difficult to get funding for things like the community block development grants, which funds a lot of nonprofits and a lot of the redevelopment dollars that cities use to do cool projects. So I do expect some litigation on this front, cities in the state, but the state's given itself now some power.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911. Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.